Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, he wasn't the answer in Houston, but can Carmelo Anthony help the Heat? And can Danny Ainge and Pat Riley get past their beef and help each other?
Or maybe instead of being buyers, the Heat should be sellers. We'll talk about if Miami should be exploring trades with some of their veteran players. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil. It's been a weird week, and because of Jimmy Butler news breaking over the weekend, we had to delay our weekly mailbag that we usually do on Mondays, but we're doing it today for our Wednesday show. We're going to answer some questions about tanking, David's favorite subject, absolutely, and the best use of Rodney Magruder. But I want to start with asking you a question, David.
All right.
Given the Heat situation and given the Rockets and Carmelo Anthony are parting ways, should the Heat explore the idea of bringing in the official photographer of the Banana Nut crew? Yeah. Or the Banana Nut? Banana Nut Bread / Banana Boat crew? The Banana Nut crew, I kind of like a little bit better.
I don't think they should bring back either Banana Boat or Banana Nut photographers. At this point, look, Carmelo, I think, got a kind of a raw deal. And, you know, from everything we've heard, or at least from the players' perspective, it's interesting how players have rallied around Melo. It seems like he's the fall guy for the lackluster start to the season in Houston. Obviously, things haven't gone for them as well as they would have liked. And Carmelo is taking some of the brunt, if not most of that, even though they've lost Chris Paul due to injury and they've lost James Harden due to injury. And, you know, they traded away a number of their star defensive players and they lost their defensive coach and Jeff Podzelic. I mean, they've lost a lot of different things and somehow it's Melo's fault. But either way, he doesn't seem to be likely to stay with the team for much longer. And as far as what he's looking for in the next phase of his career, and I think there is a next phase, it's not Miami. Look, I was all for adding Carmelo over the summer because I thought there was a little bit more left in the tank. I thought Miami would be able to get him in better shape and he'd be able to contribute at least as an offensive player a little bit more than he had in or Oklahoma City last year. And I think there's still that role for Carmelo somewhere, but it's probably on a contending team. I would like to see him in Golden State. And maybe that's not the best idea considering that there might be some locker room issues that we're hearing about today. But at the same time, I think a veteran like Carmelo, he is beloved, as beloved as anybody around the league. I think he's probably more popular with players than even a LeBron James. And that's saying something. You know, from the players' perspective, they love everything that Carmelo does. They love the USA basketball version of Carmelo. They love his gunning, score-first mentality. And again, he is very well appreciated around the league. So I think there's a team that could probably use a guy like Carmelo. It's just not Miami.
Yeah, I want to maybe explore that idea of what team could use Carmelo Anthony, but I want to push back a little bit on that whole the fall guy term that's been thrown around. We saw Dwayne Wade tweet that Carmelo was the fall guy, and a lot of people have been speculating that. I don't know if he's necessarily the fall guy. I actually think that the Houston is doing right by Carmelo more than blaming Carmelo Anthony here. Look, this is a guy who's playing 29 minutes a game for them this season. He wasn't really supposed to, and yeah, suspensions and injuries kind of factor into that.
Yeah.
But this was not a guy who was supposed to play 30 minutes a game. This was a guy who was supposed to come in and be what Gerald Green was for them last year, be what Joe Johnson was for them last year, just be kind of a dude on the bench that they could turn to when they need some scoring. And I don't know what Carmelo's expectation was, but there's clearly been a change in Houston where they've decided that after a disappointing start, that they've got to play more of those young, spry, defensive-minded wings like Gary Clark, who's come along for them, and James Ennis and things like that, that they've got to surround Harden and Paul with those kinds of guys and start those kinds of guys next to that core group of Harden, Paul, and Capella. And I think they sat Carmelo Anthony down and told him that this is what's happening. You're not getting starters minutes, regardless if you're in the starting lineup or in the bench. You're not going to get starters minutes. We've got to surround our offensive engines with guys who can get it done defensively, just like our formula was last year. And we're also not switching the scheme defensively for you to hold up better because, quite frankly, you're just not that important to this roster. And so I think they're probably – I think after having that conversation, they Carmelo was like, well, then I don't want to play here. And so they are probably – and that's why we're here. That's why Carmelo Anthony is available now. I do think that there's another team for him. I thought about that Warriors idea. It's really interesting, right? Where you're like, okay, Nick Young didn't necessarily work out. You didn't get the wing player that you wanted this offseason because DeMarcus Cousins became an option for you. Maybe like it makes sense in some weird world that the Warriors are good enough defensively that you could probably get away with having Carmelo out there. I mean, I don't think it's the worst idea. The other idea that I've heard out there, Philadelphia. They've got a roster spot available. Hmm. Elton Brand doesn't know necessarily what he wants to do with it yet. I don't know. Maybe they can use a guy. They need shooting. Carmelo in Philadelphia?
You know, it's an intriguing idea. And, you know, it's never quite as easy. Look, if anything, we should look to last year's Cleveland Cavaliers as an example of what could go wrong. You just can't plug in veteran players.
The Cavaliers maybe as an option.
No. I don't know that Carmelo would want that, even though maybe he could go out like Kobe, you know, just shooting like 50 times a game. And that might be something he'd appreciate, although I don't think
that's the case. I want to be clear. Because I didn't even answer the question.
Do you want him in Miami?
After my little spiel.
Yeah.
I don't want him in Miami. It doesn't make sense. I was with you. I was more like you with the Jimmy Butler situation.
Yeah.
Every day I kind of changed my mind. But yeah, I'm glad it didn't happen. I don't think it's the right fit. Not because he wouldn't help my cause for tanking this year, because he definitely would, but it wouldn't help in as far as the development of guys like Winslow and Richardson goes. We can't get any other guys on this roster who's going to take the ball out of those guys' hands, because you need them to play on the ball as much as possible for their own development's sake.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I'm out on Carmelo.
So for Philadelphia, I mean, look, I think it's going to be difficult enough. Look, it's been day one of the Jimmy Butler experience. Already he's labeled Markelle Fultz's shooting woes as psychological, completely dismissing any possibility of a neurological damage or anything physical that might be going on with Markelle. So I think as much as we've heard some positivity that Embiid and Ben Simmons will learn to appreciate a guy like Jimmy Butler, that might not necessarily be the case. And if Anthony is looking for one last opportunity for a championship, and that's, I think, what his goal was with either Oklahoma City last year and right. Houston this year, that might not be the best place for it. Better to go to a surefire thing. I think Golden State is a good place for that. Toronto, that might be a good one. I've seen Kyrie Irving kind of float the possibility of bringing him into Boston, but I don't know if that's necessarily a better fit either. I mean, they're already competing with other quality players for minutes. I don't know that you want to add Carmelo Anthony to the mix.
And that's the thing with Melo. I mean, I don't know that he's going to get the situation that he's looking for anywhere. If he goes to Golden State, he's not playing 30 minutes
a game.
Okay,
how about this?
If he goes to Boston, he's not playing 30 minutes a game.
I just thought of this. Denver? A reunion tour? No, reunion tour there with Michael
Malone? The best passing team in the league. Don't ruin it. Like, my favorite league pass team. Do not ruin it by bringing in Carmelo Anthony. Please, please don't do that.
Welcome back home, Melo. I could see it now.
Oh, my
gosh. Those would be great stories. I'm all for it.
The Knicks?
No.
That's his home.
He just left the
Knicks.
Why
not? The Knicks are actively tanking. The only reason they got rid of Carmelo Anthony was because of his contract.
No.
Bring him back. Tank. It's not like you're taking the ball out of Kristaps Porzingis' hands.
Okay, best choice. Sorry, I totally blew it here. Washington. Isn't he from West Baltimore?
There you go.
I mean, he could come back there. Like they have such a smooth locker room. There's so much camaraderie oozing from that roster.
I could see them talking themselves into Carmelo Anthony, kind of being like, yeah, he's like what Paul Pierce was for us. Like maybe like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Remember Pierce helping them in the playoffs?
Yeah.
One thing's for sure is Carmelo Anthony, the best days are behind him. He's not going to find anywhere that is going to showcase him like he was in New York or Denver early in his career.
Right.
And so he needs to figure out what he really wants. And if he's willing to take just a role on the end of the bench. I've made this comparison before. Tracy McGrady signing with the Spurs right before the 2013 playoffs. I think that's where he's at now. He's much closer to that than he was in his All-Star form. Let's take a break here, and we've got our mailbag questions next. The Heat may have to rethink Rodney Magruder's position when the team gets healthy, and we'll talk about that later on, but let's kick off the mailbag with a few questions all related to tanking, David. This one, first one comes from Taylor, who writes in, I know David hates the idea, but I've come to the conclusion that the Heat need to trade the vets, attach guys like Dragic, Magruder, Ellington, Olynyk to some of these bad deals, play the young guys, and do a mini tank. Tyler writes in, I just heard the podcast you guys posted yesterday. I realize Wes and I are on the same page, and I am all for selling high on Dragic, Ellington, and Magruder. Then Sam writes in, I totally agree with what Wes said on Monday. I think we need to trade all of the vets that we possibly can. That being said, what teams do you think could realistically trade? We could trade Dragic to? I was thinking maybe the Spurs. So one thing that I'm learning from all these mailbag questions is that everybody agrees with me.
Yeah, I had no idea your last name was actually Colangelo, and apparently you're going with several different accounts. Everybody's supporting Wes. Please send him jerseys. He needs them. I don't know. I don't know what to make of all this immediate love. You know, because 2 weeks ago, it was like, what is Wes thinking? And now all of a sudden, it's like, Wes is absolutely 100% correct. It seems a little fishy to me.
Like, three-game losing streak gets people in all sorts of weird ways. I
guess
so. I don't know.
I guess so. And they're willing to agree with you. I mean, look, I understand there's frustration there. I've talked about it before in our last podcast, and I know that there's going to be some problems there. I don't even know where to begin with the sudden Goldberg love fest here. I'm not sure where to tackle all these questions. I'm going to stick to my guns and say that tanking isn't a realistic option. Look, you know, I was just thinking about this in context of Philadelphia on a piece that I'm working on. You know, everybody's looking at Philadelphia as the role model for the process and tanking. Now, Miami can't go around that. They can't go about that route. But what they've done was basically get lucky on a number of draft picks, but also got unlucky on some draft picks. And they were able to turn those around to second-tier level players and turn them into a first-level player in Jimmy Butler. And I think that's where Miami is right now. Look, maybe they don't have an Embiid or a Simmons on the roster, but they've got enough second-tier level guys that they could potentially still get a future superstar somewhere. It's just not Jimmy. It wasn't Paul George. It wasn't Kawhi Leonard. Who knows who it could possibly be? We talked about this earlier in the week in our theoretical fish list, and I think there is still the option there of luring a superstar at some point in the future. But for now, what are we competing for? What are we trying to do? Are we really going to tear up this team now that could potentially win 40 games, 45 games, and make the playoffs in the hope that we're going to be so, so bad that in 5 years we could potentially be a title contender again? I mean, is that what we really want? Think about the misery that comes with five really bad losing seasons in the hope that you can get a good draft pick the way that Philadelphia did. I mean, they went through a lot of misery to get a good Joel Embiid.
And that's never going to happen again because right. The NBA stepped in and basically said, no, you're not going to do this anymore, and made them fire a bunch of people.
Okay.
But, and you're right. Look, I don't think Heat fans want that. I don't think it's kind of funny where Heat fans are at, where even during the Big Three era, we're like, man, we never really draft anybody. We trade away all of our picks. It's like, yeah, we got LeBron, Bosh, and Dwayne Wade. Who cares?
Right.
Like, what do you want? You want a pick at 27 every year? Who gives a crap? But it's. And then, you know, they start picking players like Justice Winslow in the lottery and Bam Adebayo in the lottery, and you homegrown a guy like Rodney Magruder and Josh Richardson, all these guys, and you're like, well, now they're not good enough. Well, yeah, they're not good enough because LeBron's not on the roster, right. Because Dwayne Wade in his prime's not on the roster. You need that guy on the roster. And, you know, throughout this season, just, you know, these first 10 games, when one of these guys steps up, look at Hassan Whiteside against the Spurs, almost a triple-double with blocks. He had a superstar-level game. When one of these guys steps up and has a superstar night, the Heat win. More times than not, the Heat win. That's a reflection on the rest of the depth of the roster and how good this team could be if it had a superstar. They just don't have that. And when that person doesn't step up on a nightly basis, which for the most part, it doesn't happen because nobody on the team is capable of doing that on a nightly basis, then... the team loses. And so I do think that this team is sub 500. It's a three-game losing streak. It looks bad, but it's not as bad, I think, as it looks right now. I think they are just a piece away, like you were saying.
Did I just get you to flip your perspective here?
No. There's a big but coming.
Oh, man.
But I do, for 1 year, they've got to tank.
Oh.
Because there's no other path. There's no other path. You've already said we're not trading Josh Richardson. He's the only guy that you can realistically trade right now to get a superstar player. I don't think you could package Kelly Olynyk and James Johnson together and get Jimmy Butler. I don't like Covington and Sarge are way more valuable than those guys.
Have you
those
seen,
guys are on bad contracts. Those the you know, Covington and Sarge were on good contracts.
Have you seen the reported offer that Miami made for Jimmy Butler? I'm not quite sure.
After Richardson?
I'm sorry?
After the Richardson and Olynyk offer, it was Dragic and Winslow?
No, I saw Richardson, Olynyk, and the draft pick, and then where Riley balked was the $5 million in cash considerations.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a package for Jimmy Butler. I mean, and I don't
know. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that did not happen.
Yeah, I don't know that Miami fans would have been glad with that. And that's another thing too. It's like, look, we anticipated Jimmy Butler landing with his team, and if that's the case, even if they had kept Josh Richardson, what would the ceiling on this team have been? 50 wins? 51 wins? I mean,
with Butler and Richardson,
So,
and, that's good. Like, we talk about, like, 50 wins is way better than what the Heat are now. Like, they're, for sure. And then maybe you get a Bam Adebayo or a Winslow to pop, you know? And then all of a sudden you're talking about things. But right now, the Heat, and that's better than what they were. Like, the Heat are an eighth seed right now. They're a 500 team.
My point is, you could have potentially gotten Jimmy Butler, or you could potentially get another superstar at some point soon. Look, I mean, we were in the running for Kyrie Irving. We were in the running for Gordon Hayward. I think there are still options. There will be options in the future. We've seen a lot of superstars traded over the last few seasons. Blake Griffin, Paul George, Kyrie Irving, et cetera.
But like I said, the Heat aren't willing to part with the things that they're going to need to part with get that star. Like, Jimmy Butler was there for them if they wanted it. They would have to trade Josh Richardson.
Why didn't they ask Philadelphia for $5 million in cash considerations?
I don't know why. Who knows? Tibbs probably thought he can get. He was just like, "I want $5 million. Let's do this." Here's the thing: is that if Magruder and Ellington specifically, like, this team has so few assets that you can't let those guys walk. Like, you're not tearing down the team if you trade away Magruder and Ellington. You're trading away guys that you're not going to be able to re-sign anyway. And so you might as well do it. We've seen this. We see this happen every year in the NBA. And for some reason, the Heat have not done it over the years because they value their players too much and they value whatever locker room continuity that they're trying to build. And right now, that hasn't been worth a damn in Miami. Like, that whatever continuity they have has not translated into wins. And so I'm like, just trade them. Like, you're not – they're gone anyway. Get something out of it. Goran Dragic is the same thing, man. It's just like – look, I like Goran Dragic, and he's not a bad player. He's probably Miami's one of the Heat's best three players. All the more reason to trade him right now. Not saying that he's going to walk away, but there's really no use for him just like wasting away the rest of his career here. Trade him to LA. Trade him to Philly. Trade him to Brooklyn. Trade him to a team that can actually use him and get something out of it. Because right now you need to build up the treasure chest a little bit here for the next time a superstar does come. I'm not saying tank. I'm not saying tear it down. But you've got your 2019 pick. Get something useful out of it. And then get something useful of the guys that are walking away anyway. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know.
It doesn't need to be a full-blown process.
I figure the problem is that Miami fans, and perhaps you to some extent, think you can turn apples into really, really great apples. And I just don't think that's realistic either. I mean, even if you package a good apple with Goran with a bad apple like Tyler Johnson's contract or something along those lines, you're going to get something like in return. And that's not necessarily going to help this team much.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Yeah, that's not going to happen. There's no way. Like, I don't even think you could throw Magruder onto Tyler's contract and get off of Tyler Johnson.
Right.
That's the other part. That's the other reason why this team can't really tank is, number one, they don't really own their draft picks anyway, and that future pick that they owe to Philly is unprotected, so you better not be horrible that year anyway.
Right.
But you're probably not getting off of Whiteside. You're probably not getting off of Tyler. You're not getting off of Deion Waiters, and you're not getting off of James Johnson. But you can get something for Dragic, Magruder, Ellington. Maybe Kelly Olynyk. I don't know. And the only reason to trade Olynyk is to make more room for Bam Adebayo, because, again, you're not trading Whiteside anymore.
Just start over.
There's no landing spot.
Fire Riley. Fire Spoelstra. Mickey Arison should sell the team. Trade everybody. Move arenas. Go to Broward. I don't know. We'll figure something out.
We've got more mailbag questions after this break. Let's get to our final mailbag questions. This one comes from Billy, who writes in, could Boston be Miami's next big trade partner? Huh. Kyrie needs his money.
Sure does.
Gordon Hayward looks like a shell of himself. Huh. Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown will all need their dues. Choices need to be made. And while it may be early, the trio of Tatum, Brown, and Rozier looked really solid in the playoffs last year, and the addition of Kyrie and Hayward has caused problems. David, can Pat Riley and Danny Ainge get together and help each other out here?
Yes. I think, look, beef only exists for as long as it needs to until it's replaced by an actual need to strike a deal together. As much as I'm sure Riley hates Danny Ainge and Danny Ainge is probably feeling pretty similarly towards Pat, I think if one team needed a deal, and I'm not sure that one really exists as much as Billy and maybe others right. want to see it, I just don't know that there's a realistic deal with Boston in the works. But as far as the beef is concerned, they would definitely squash that in order to get something done. But as far as any potential deal, you know, I think there might be, and I talked about this in our fish list episode, you know, one of those young players, either a Rozier or a Tatum or a Brown, might need more minutes and they might express some kind of displeasure at being in Boston with their logjam with Hayward and Kyrie and others, and they might request a trade, and I'm sure Miami would be open to it. But I'm not sure that Trader Dan, and that's the nickname that Ainge has earned over the years, is going to take any of our bad contracts in exchange for a really great young player. That doesn't seem very likely either. Look, I'd love to get a Jaylen Brown on this team, or definitely a Jason Tatum, but I don't think that's likely to happen. So I'm not sure a deal potentially exists.
Yeah, Danny Ainge is too smart to trade with Pat Riley. I mean, just given what the Heat have, like every trade Ainge has made that's been a step back trade, he's gotten a ton of assets out of it, like right. draft picks and promising young players on rookie scale deals. The Heat have one guy that fits that, and that's Bam Adebayo, and they don't have any draft picks that they could trade right now, realistically, that would even register on Ainge's radar. But, you know, Gordon Hayward, like, what if that doesn't work out? Is Brad Stevens one to, well, it's not really Brad Stevens' decision, but do the Celtics just say, you know what, Hayward, we signed you thinking this, but Jason Tatum popped, and we like him better, so see ya. Like, maybe, but I don't see what the Heat can give up for him. I think there's a possibility there that something can shake loose out of Boston. But they've got the summer to figure that out. Nothing's happening right now. Yeah. They've got to see what Kyrie Irving decides this summer, if he resigns or not. Terry Rozier, what's he get offered on his restricted deal? Do they want to match? Do they let him walk? There's that whole situation too.
What do you think is Boston's biggest problem this year? I mean, obviously there's a lot of players all fighting for minutes, but I mean, obviously they haven't gone to the best start that a lot of people had envisioned. What do you think?
You know what I'm going to say here.
What is it?
It's Brad Stevens is not as good as a coach as Eric Spoelstra is. All this love for Brad Stevens. Meanwhile, he draws the best out of timeout plays, all this crap. And you know what? Yeah, he's a great ATO play caller and all this stuff. And he got the Boston Celtics their record better every year. Blah, 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 blah. He, you know, coached this heap of trash basically to the playoffs, even though they had like six lottery picks on the team, but yet they were a bunch of no names. So this narrative is crazy to me. You know what? You know what Eric Spoelstra is great at?
No.
Coaching an actual trash heap team to the playoffs.
Oh, wow.
Look at last year's team.
Right.
And then managing huge egos like LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. We don't know that Brad Stevens can do that. And I think that right now is the problem in Boston, is that he's dealing with, you know, stars, like superstar players like Kyrie and Jason Tatum, who is way earlier in the developmental stage of his career than anybody expected. That is a much different team. Like, Brad Stevens was basically still coaching college the last few years in the NBA. This is the big leagues now, and that's what I think is the thing. I think Brad Stevens is adjusting to having to actually coach star players who make way more money than him and probably don't really give a rat's ass to what he says.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a hell of a run next year when Eric Spoelstra gets fired this offseason and replaces Terry Stotts in Portland. So we'll see what happens.
I don't like this new gimmick. I don't. I'm really not on board with this. We have to have a production meeting after this. Chris writes in: Is Rodney Magruder better in the starting lineup or off the bench, where he can handle the ball a little bit more? Interesting thought.
Where do you stand on this? Because I'm leaning more towards having him come off the bench, but I'm sure you're probably
really.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, look, it's interesting, right? Because when Deion Waiters comes back, you're going to have to find minutes for him, unfortunately. James Johnson comes back, and that starts to move some of those weird lineups with Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson and Gruder playing, like, basically forward positions. You have to clear some of that out when James Johnson comes back. I mean, the way this roster works, everybody coming back affects the rotation. I like him better in the starting unit. I think it's nice to see him handle a little bit more and do those sort of things.
Yeah.
But I think, like, let's just don't bite off more than you can chew. Like, he's good in that tertiary role as a ball handler, as a relief valve.
Right.
I'm not ready for him to just be the backup point guard.
Okay, that makes sense. I could see that. We're still not quite sure. Like, I'm not 100% convinced that he's ready to take this huge leap. I know he's made some real progress. I think it's going to be more difficult to prove that on a regular basis, although we've seen some positive signs, and maybe perhaps one of the few positives to come out of this Heat season has been Rodney's development. I'm just not sure that he's going to be the guy. I'm not sure that he can be counted on as a full-time starter or a backup guard, to be honest with you. I'm not sure what his most effective role is off the bench or as a starter. I tend to think that because he's not supremely qualified to guard bigger players, I'm not sure where he'd fit in the mm-hmm. starting lineup either. And you've got Goran there, who I think is still a better player than Rodney at this point.
Well, that's the problem. Trade Goran. Oh, there you go.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
We're right back where we started. You trade Goran now, you get some assets in return, and let Rodney Magruder be your fill-in point guard until he walks away, because apparently we're not trading him. Look, I think Rodney Magruder's best comp is Malcolm Brogdon, that does more stuff, and Malcolm Brogdon plays like that nominal point guard position. But what if you could play Malcolm Brogdon, or I'm sorry, Rodney Magruder at the nominal point guard spot, but let Justice Winslow do most of the ball handling? Let Josh Richardson do a bunch of the ball handling? I'm fine with that. But you got to trade Goran Dragic first.
Oh, boy.
We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of tonight's game against the Nets, but that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts. And as always, you can reach us by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Absolutely, Wes.